There, they were looking up at the tall white wall and deciding how best to exploit the situation. Lady was saying, "I fear our supply of bamboo poles is growing too small. It's certain that Long Shadow will send shadows against us at least once." She spoke Taglian. She didn't care who heard what she said. And plenty of years were nearby, including Blade, Willow Swan, and the Nar generals Ochiba and Sindawe, none of whom enjoyed my complete trust. Crows were, as always, plentiful too. They were turning the ruins of Kialune into a major rookery. Good eating there, I suppose, with the cold weather preserving the corpses of the Shadow Master's subjects. Almost everyone threw rocks at the birds. They'd become adept at dodging. I suspected resignation would set in eventually, and the only time we would enjoy any privacy would be when Lady used one of the spells she developed for frightening the birds away. A ripple of astonished disturbance passed through the circling birds. No one else noticed, but I was alert for it because I'd been wondering if One Eye was going to watch. If anyone else figured this out, you can do nothing in this world without leaving some mark, somehow. If someone else knows, what sort of trace you will leave? One of the crystal tower tops received so many fireballs that it began to ring. The sound started as a soft hum and rapidly swelled to a raging shriek. The tower top exploded in a cloud of smoke and dust and spinning shards that melted holes in the snow and earth wherever they fell. The event so startled everyone that it distracted even Lady for a moment. In that brief moment, Long Shadow counterattacked. The boots of an invisible giant 1,000 feet tall began stomping and kicking the men atop Overlook's wall and those trying to join them. In the moments it took Lady to overcome her surprise and respond, every ladder got stripped away, and the bands holding the secured section of wall got scattered. Many fell to their deaths. Lady stopped the stomping, but all efforts to reestablish a ladder link to the men up top failed. Long Shadow was fully into the game. Croker stayed and watched for the rest of the day. I stayed with him. Nothing much happened. We walked back. Croker said, "Overall, that may have been a net gain. We still have people inside, if we can preserve them. We shall make every effort." His mind was racing. Something had happened outside whatever play script he'd written, and he was trying to incorporate it as a positive. He had no attention left over for little questions like why I was using Ty Day's horse while my brother-in-law was hoofing it, which reminded me that I needed to check up on Sleepy. The weather and the war hadn't gone the way I'd expected here, so his life might not have been comfortable lately either. The wind rose dramatically during our walk. Pellets of ice came as precursors of the storm. "I've got a feeling this is going to be a bad one," Croker grunted. "Pity she didn't pull it off this morning. We could be inside and warm. At least it ought to be about the last big one of the winter. That reminds me, how are we doing finding seed grain?" Chapter 47. The storm lingered a long time. A couple times I almost became lost just getting from my shelter to One Eye's wagon or Croker's shelter. The blizzard brought air so cold we had to move smoke into Croker's place to keep him from freezing. The soldiers suffered badly, though mostly through their own failure to provide themselves with adequate shelter. Captives had warned them that winter here would be much harsher than any they'd ever known. Once again, I got to know the joys of sharing quarters with Mother Gota. Taide insisted she had to get in out of the weather, and I've been developing a soft streak as I get older. I allowed it. She behaved uncharacteristically for Kigota. She kept her own counsel most of the time. She stayed out of the way. She helped Taide dig out cold earth and carry it away so we would have more room. She didn't say a disparaging word about all the time I spent writing. She worked hard, though I never had been able to criticize her on that account, ever. She made me nervous. She was almost human. Though she made very little effort to be pleasant or friendly. The captain, though, was sharing space with One Eye and Smoke for the duration. He was much less happy than I was. And I was not happy because I was getting almost no chance to travel with Smoke. When I did stumble over there, they wouldn't let me go ghost walking long enough to do more than check something specific, which was always something on a list they'd prepared but claimed not to have had time to check for themselves. Croker didn't ghost walk much, but he didn't let the blizzard and its aftermath keep him from working on other stuff. Over there in Overlook, Long Shadow and Howler were putting in hours as long as ours. And when he was not with his ally Howler, the Shadow Master had his head together with Narayan. Singh seemed to have perked up now that he had an almost friend. The Daughter of Night seemed content to ignore everybody and live entirely within herself. Fighting continued inside the fortress. I almost had to envy our guys who were trapped in there. They were scared all the time, but they were warm, and most of the time, they had enough to eat. Fresh snow fell every 3 days. Harsh winds never stopped blowing. I began to worry about the wood we needed to keep going. The snow was so deep, it was almost impossible to get around. Nobody knew how to make snowshoes. Probably only 3 or 4 old crew guys besides me knew what snowshoes were. I thought it was a great time for Long Shadow to send out some of his pet shadows, but he failed to grab the advantage. He wasn't confident that Howler could withstand Lady by himself, nor, I suspect, did he want to turn his back on his partner for long. The dreams intensified. They diversified as well. I went to the Plain of Death and the Caves of Ice, and I went to the Nguyenbao Delta Swamps to see Sara, and into the hills and mountains behind us, where I caught glimpses of Goblin and Mogaba in huddled hiding places, trying to wait out the weather. Those dreams all seemed very real. Even more real seemed my dreams of Soulcatcher, whose lonesome misery was epic. The place she'd chosen to hole up seemed to pull snow and wind both, till the former was deeper than she was tall. The first 2 times I suffered these dreams, I took them passively. The 3rd night, my own presence there seemed so real that I tried tinkering with reality. The dream didn't change, but my place within it did. I experimented much more next night. The morning afterward, after a not entirely inedible breakfast prepared by Mother Goda, I slogged through the snow to visit the captain.
"Had to get away?"
he asked. "They're not being bad. The old woman's even fixing food that's palatable, if you're not real picky.
What's up? Where's your shadow?"
"I guess you didn't want to deal with the snow." The snow was the first thing I'd seen that made Tai Day want to back down. This winter was his first extensive experience with the white stuff.
"None of us do. Anything from the old guy?
In this weather?
You're kidding."
He was still sure that Uncle Doge was up to something. Maybe I ought to dream about him. "What I wanted you to know is my dreams are getting really strange," I explained.
"Is it your imagination, or are you really going out?"
"It feels like being out there with Smoke. Almost. I don't have any feeling of control, so far." Croker grunted. He looked thoughtful, seeing some possibilities. I saw a few myself. What I thought was I could make a quick circuit with Smoke to see how closely reality conforms to what I dreamed. I had little trouble accepting the possibility because I'd been experiencing such unusual dreams for so long.
"Do it, without wasting any time."
"What's your hurry? The snow isn't going anywhere for a while." Croker grunted again. He was turning into a genuine old fart. The flight with Smoke showed me nothing I hadn't seen in my dreams. It didn't show me Soulcatcher. Smoke still refused to get close, but I passed high overhead and saw that she was indeed caught in a side canyon where the snow was extremely deep. Chapter 48. The weather changed eventually. The snow melted. We came out of our shelters like a bunch of groundhogs. So did the rest of the world. But most everyone was interested in recovering, not in getting into fights. Fighting did continue inside Overlook,
though mostly Long Shadow soldiers were satisfied to keep Lady's troops bottled up. Those men were in no hurry to get themselves killed. Now they were cut off from the outside. They had control of stores enough for a long time and complete confidence that Lady would make every effort to relieve them. She would. I used smoke to look in on some of her planning. She had expected any men who got inside to be cut off for a while. She'd chosen shock units and commanders she believed would be able to handle the hardship. The prince's division was fighting in the ruins of Kialune and in the hills north of us, where Mogava persisted in harassing the shit out of us. Lady's division held the ground between the city and Overlook. One of the captain's divisions was around the other side, astride the road to the Shadow Gate. The other remained in reserve. Spring was a real threat on the horizon. I asked Croker, "You think the Prabhrindra Dra is maybe going to get tired of getting the honors in all these fights?" He gave me a startled look. "Am I that obvious?" "About what?" I looked around. Only Tyday was close enough to hear anything. "You just... it could be his division is the most incompetent and least reliable. This army will suffer a lot of casualties before we get to Katavar Murgan. Correct me if I'm wrong. It seems to me it would be in the company's interest if most of those happened outside our own ranks. I trust my old division. A lot of those men want to join the company. Most of them would fight the prince if I gave the order. Lately, a lot of Taglians wanted to join the company. I think most of the applications were genuine. Guys who take the oath always stick. They never take the oath lightly. The oath is always administered in secret. Recent recruits have been asked to keep their new allegiances to themselves. No one outside the company had any idea how strong we really were. Some people inside were getting the mushroom treatment, too, if their name was something like Lady. The old man was turning paranoia into a fine art. I understand that. What I'm wondering is, how come Lady's getting the hurt, too? If something didn't end up on the prince's back, usually it went to her. Croker's shrug told me he wasn't quite sure himself. "I guess I don't want her in any position where she has to deal with too much temptation. And the new division? I wouldn't ask them to face off with the prince. They probably won't ever be ready to take our side in the civil scrimmage." He looked me in the eye. This campaign had elevated him to a new level of hardness. This was like trading looks with Kina. I didn't look away. Croker explained, "I'll deliver on my promises." He meant that our employers wouldn't deliver. The Radishah especially was determined to screw us. The prince had been out here long enough to become one of the gang. We never did get a chance to work our magic on his sister. I said, "I spend a lot of time wishing I'd stayed a farm boy." "You're still having trouble with the nightmares?" "Every night. But it's not like it's a direct attack. I always work my way through and use the opportunity to scout around. Sure as hell ain't pleasant, though, I'll tell you that. Kina, or somebody or something who wanted me to think she was Kina, was in my dreams all the time. My own conviction was that it was Kina, not Catcher. She was still trying to promise me Sara back. I wished she would do something about the odor. She trying to work Lady, too? Probably. Almost certainly. Or maybe Lady's working her. Oh, he wasn't listening. He was concentrating on Overlook now. Fireballs had begun zipping around over there. Several fireballs flashed in the ruins of Kialune, too. The people Mogaba had in there were stubborn. The man really could find good soldiers and could motivate them. The Prabhrindra Dra had begun razing parts of the ruined city, building by building, salvaging burnables where he could. It was still cold. At the moment, there were 8 inches of snow on the ground, atop a couple of inches of hard-packed sleet. This was spring? How many more storms would we have to endure before the weather gave up delivering unpleasant surprises? Long Shadow's surviving crystal turrets sure looked comfy. I wondered why he hadn't bothered us much lately.
I checked the smoke rising from Kialune. I hoped the prince would save a few nice places where us special folks could hole up in comfort after he rooted out the last partisans. I was tired of living like a badger. "What's going on in there?" Croker asked, indicating Overlook. "Nothing's changed. I don't understand Long Shadow. Not even a little. It's like he's determined to destroy himself. He's in some kind of emotional slough where he just can't exercise any initiative. You've been there, I expect. I have, I know. You know what needs doing, but you just can't move. It doesn't seem like it's worth the effort. It's the same sort of paralysis that came over Smoke those last few weeks before he got knocked into his coma."
Croker looked thoughtful. "How about you?
You feeling like you're getting enough rest? With these dreams?" "It isn't bothering me yet," I lied. "Though I didn't need sleep. I needed an emotional respite. I needed a few weeks alone, somewhere, with my wife."
"Where are your in-laws?"
The eternal question. Uncle Doge was still missing. "Good question. And before you ask, I still don't have a clue what they're up to. If they're up to anything."
"I worry about so many Wang Bao being so close to us."
"Bad can't happen, Captain. Not ever. They're with us as a debt of honor. As you always tell me, you had to be there. That sure helped you understand." He glared at the Great White Fortress.
"You think we could let refugees get through?
Huh? Put another burden on Long Shadow. More mouths to feed. He wouldn't let them in." I was still amazed that Long Shadow had provided himself with such a small garrison.
"There were never more than 1,000 people inside Overlook, including servants and families, and those refugees who had gotten in before the destruction of the scaffolding. There was no mundane way the fortress could have been defended against multiple attacks. But Long Shadow hadn't planned to deal with the mundane. He'd expected to be safe behind countless adamantine spells for as long as he liked. I don't think it'll be much longer, Mergen. Not much longer at all."
Fireballs flew around over there. A rising breeze lifted some of those box kites the quartermasters had dragged all the way from Taglios. In this sort of wind, they could lift 25 pounds to the top of the wall. That was not what Croker had brought them along for, he said. But he didn't expound.
"I admire your confidence, boss."
"Yeah, next year in Kadavar." Next year in Kadavar had become the sarcastic slogan of the old crew these past few years. Most would just as soon have faded away and gone back north. The constant stress of being in service to Taglios suited nobody but Lady. Despite her bouts with exhaustion, she seemed to thrive emotionally, where raging paranoia was the only sane way of facing reality. Croker wasn't amused. His goals for the company weren't acceptable butts for humor. His sense of humor had been assassinated by this campaign. Or at least, it had gone as comatose as Smoke. "Tide, how about we go for a walk?" When the old man got in a mood, it never hurt to be somewhere else. Chapter 49. One Eye is supposed to be my backup as analyst, at least till Sleepy gets back and learns the ropes. Those few times I've handed him the job, or Croker did when he was doing the annals, he proved conclusively that we need Sleepy desperately. The old fart can't live beyond the moment most of the time. Not that I blame him at his age. So I was surprised when he bothered to tell me, well, after the fact, that he had witnessed something interesting while he was out scouting with Smoke. No, he never wrote anything down, and he couldn't recall all the details now, but better late than never, right? Maybe. Old Smoke wasn't anchored in time. He and I drifted back to a moment not many hours after Narayan had visited Howler on the wall, and their little chat got interrupted by Lady's gang of insensitive brutes. Sing and the Daughter of Night had reached safety in her quarters. The child didn't talk much. Narayan was obviously extremely uncomfortable in her presence now, though she was a tiny thing, even for her age. She ignored him, settled at a small work table, and turned up the wick on the small oil lantern. The stunner, for me,
was seeing her set about the same sort of work that I did almost every day. Astounded, I watched as her little hand slowly, laboriously, recorded words in a language I didn't recognize and which I discovered she did not read. For as soon as I saw what she was doing, I darted around through time looking for an explanation. The writing got started a week ago. It was the middle of the night. Narayan had stayed up late, praying, calming his soul, trying to reach the state the Daughter of Night achieved when she touched the goddess. He'd tried 100 times. He failed this time as well. Failure no longer ached inside him. He was resigned. He just wished he could be allowed to understand. Hardly had he fallen into his dark dreams before the Daughter of Night was tugging at his shoulder. "Wake up, Narayan! Wake up!" He cracked an eyelid. The child was more animated than he'd seen since before she learned that she was to be the instrument of Kina, the hands of the goddess in this world. He groaned. He wanted to swat her, wanted to tell her to go back to her pallet, but he remained wholly dedicated to his goddess, prepared to execute her will. The will of the daughter had to be considered an extension of the will of the mother, however difficult that might make life.
"Yes. What is it?"
He rubbed his face and groaned.
"I need writing materials. Pens. Ink. Brushes. Inkstones. Pen knives. Whatever is involved. And a big bound book of blank pages. Quickly."
"But you can't read or write. You're too little."
"My mother will guide my hand. But I must begin my task quickly. She fears we may not have much time left here in safety."
"What are you going to do?"
Narayan asked, wide awake now and completely baffled.
"She wants me to make copies of the books of the dead."
"Make copies? They've been lost for thousands of years. Even the priests of Kina doubt that they exist anymore. If they ever did."
"They exist. In another place.
I have seen them. They will exist again. She will tell me what to write down."
Narayan considered the notion for a while.
"Why? The books must be brought back into this world to help us bring on the Year of the Skulls. The first book is the most important. I don't know its title. But by the time I finish writing it down, I will be able to read it and to use it to bring forth the other books. I will be able to use those to open the way for my mother."
Narayan gulped air. He was literate. Most Taglians were. Like many who were illiterate, he was possessed of a vast awe of those who did read and write. He'd seen great sorcery since associating himself with Long Shadow, yet considered literacy the greatest witchery of all.
"She is the mother of all night," he murmured. "There is none greater. I want those materials, Narayan."
That was no 4-year-old talking.
"I will find them."
Back in the hours after their escape from Lady Soldiers, while fighting persisted only a short distance away, the child wrote slowly, and Narayan paced and shivered. Finally she looked up, considered him with those disturbing eyes.
"What has happened, Narayan?"
She seemed to see right through him.
"Events have surpassed my understanding. The small smelly one called me to the world to show me the heads of my brothers displayed on spears, a gift from your birth mother."
He picked at himself, reluctant to go on. I thought maybe the worst torture we could visit on him when we caught him would be a bath.
"I cannot fathom what purpose moved the goddess when she allowed all those faithful sons to fall into the woman's hands. Almost none of our people remain alive."
The child snapped her fingers. Sing shut up instantly.
"She killed them? The woman who gave this flesh life?"
"Apparently. I made a bad mistake in not making sure of her when I brought you away to your true mother."
Not once did the child ever call Lady her mother. She never mentioned her father at all.
"I am sure my mother had an overpowering reason for allowing that to happen, Narayan. Have the slaves clear out. I will consult her.
Several Shadowlander women attended the child most of the time. She treated them like furniture. They were not, in fact, slaves. Sing shooed the women while keeping one eye on the girl. She really did seem disconcerted by his complaints. Sing shut the door behind the last servant. The woman had made no effort to conceal her relief at being away from the little monster. The people of Overlook didn't like the Daughter of Night. Narayan settled into a squat. The child was in a trance already. Whatever other place she went off to, she didn't stay long. She grew pale while she was there, though, and when she returned, she was more troubled than when she'd gone. The odor of death filled the ghost world while she was away. I gutted it out. Kina didn't come. The girl told Sing,
I don't understand this, Narayan. She says none of it was her doing. She neither caused their deaths nor allowed them to happen.
The child sounded like she was quoting, though when she did speak, she always sounded older than her years.
She was unaware that it had happened.
Now they both faced a crisis of faith.
What?
Narayan was startled, frightened. Fear was a constant of life these days.
I asked her, Narayan, and she didn't know. The deaths were news to her. How could that be?
You could see the fear shove its cold claws deeper into the deceiver's guts. Now the enemies of the deceivers could murder them wholesale without their goddess even knowing? Then what protection did the children of Kina possess?
What fell powers do these killers from the north command?
The child asked.
Ah, Widowmaker and Lifetaker, more than created images. Can they be true demigods walking the earth in the guise of mortals, powerful enough to spin cobwebs of illusion before my mother's eyes?
You could see the doubts gnawing at both of them. If those red and yellow rummel men out there could be taken so easily and killed without alerting their protectress, what could save a living saint or even a deceiver messiah?
If that is the case, Sing said, we had better hope this place is as impregnable as that madman Long Shadow wants us to believe. We had better hope that he can exterminate all the Taglians already in sight. I do not think he's finished, Narayan. Not yet.
But she did not explain what she meant. Chapter 50. You who come after me, and who read these annals once I'm gone, will have difficulty believing this, but there are times when I do dumb things. Like the day I decided to stroll over to Lady's forward command post to see the fighting with my own eyes, instead of watching it from the comfort and safety of the ghost world or my dreams. I suspect that I'd pulled a stupid before I ever got there. I kept stumbling over corpses, most of them just lumps in the snow, slowly emerging. There would be another feast for crows, another celebration of corruption, after the weather turned. And it was turning. It was raining, steadily, though not heavily. The rain was melting the snow. In places, a mist, almost as thick as fog, hung in the air. I couldn't see 100 feet. This was a new experience for me, walking in the rain on thick snow, through a fog. Actually, it was a journey through silent beauty. I couldn't appreciate that because I was so miserable. Tai Day was more miserable. The delta was warm even during the winter. Sleepy was up there, enjoying the earlier spring overwhelming Taglios and its environs. I hated and envied the kid now. I should have gone myself. He'd delivered my message to Bondo Trung. I was a fly on the wall when it happened. The old man took the letter calmly, without reaction or comment, except that he did ask Sleepy to wait in case there was a reply. My message began its journey to the Temple of Gangesha. Bondo Trung carried the message himself. Meantime, I was so far away, I was in another world, freezing my ass off. Why are we here? I asked suddenly. I'm not sure why.
It seemed like a good question at the time. Tai Dei took it literally. The man couldn't help himself. He had no imagination. He shrugged. And he kept on being as alert as was humanly possible while trying to keep cold water from running down the back of his neck. I've never seen anyone as capable of carving his life into exclusive slices and of giving each slice all the attention it deserved. He was alert because dumb boy me had decided to take a shortcut through the ruins of Kialune. The proper Indra-Dra had rooted out all the enemy, had he not? Maybe. But if that was true, who were the snipers we'd encountered twice already? Slingers, who operated from the remains of what had been tenements before the earthquake. My right thigh hurt where a lucky ricochet had gotten me. I wasn't hot for revenge, just for getting out of there. I said, I don't mean why are we here freezing our butts off. I mean, why are we here in this end of the world freezing our nuts off while lunatics, without sense enough to surrender, sling rocks at us and croaker and lady figure it's a cinch to impregnate an impregnable fortress. Tai Dei indulged himself. Sometimes you don't have any idea what you're going on about, do you? He regained his self-control and returned to character. You follow the path of honor, Mergen. You strive to pay the debt of Sara, as do we all. My mother and I follow you because your debt is our debt. You lying dick-licker. Sure. Thanks. And we'll collect, won't we? But this weather just drains the fire out of me. How about you? Like most young men dream of spending their summers in Kialune.
The fog is disheartening, he admitted.
An arrow wobbled between us, sped by someone who didn't know what he was doing at targets he couldn't see well. These are some pretty stubborn little bastards, I said. Mogaba must have them convinced that we're going to eat them alive.
Perhaps they have seen no evidence otherwise.
I gleaned the arrow. You all of a sudden gonna turn talkative and philosophical on me? Tai Dei shrugged. He had become more loquacious lately. It was as though he didn't want me to forget that he was closer than my shadow. We entered an area that had been a square before the earthquake. The fog made it impossible to discern any landmarks. Shit, was my philosophical take on the situation. There! Tai Dei indicated a glow to our left. I made out noises that sounded like muted curses in Taglian. Like soldiers grumbling over a game of tonk, a pastime the Southerners had adopted enthusiastically. I headed that way, slush splashing. The stuff was ankle-deep now, except where it was deeper. Like the place where I put my foot down, and it just kept going, till I was in up to my knee. The stumble was a piece of good luck. It started me cursing in Taglian. Some nearby soldiers came to help. They'd been about to ambush us, having heard us stumbling around earlier. They recognized me. I didn't know them. Turned out, they belonged to the bunch playing cards. They'd lost their officer and their sergeant had been slain, and they had no idea what to do with themselves, so they were just trying to stay out of the way and keep warm. One of our failures as military educators. We haven't encouraged innovative thinking at the squad level. Or at any other, for that matter. I can't tell you guys what to do because I don't know your situation. Try to go up the chain of command, I guess. Find your company commander. They explained that their whole company had been sent in to clear the area of snipers. In the fog, those snipers had no trouble telling who their enemies were. Everybody who wasn't them, a luxury the Taglians didn't enjoy. The rest of the company was out there in the fog somewhere. The fire gets started on purpose?
No, sir. Some guys got excited and used their bamboo. Then we just kind of kept it going.
Why didn't you burn the buildings and roast the snipers out?
Orders. These here buildings are all in good shape. The prince wanted to set up a headquarters here.
I see. Maybe more than the Taglian realized. The proper Indra-Dra already had a headquarters. It was in a better neighborhood, boasting much better living conditions.
Nobody told me, I said. I'll tell you this. Don't get yourselves killed trying to save a pile of rocks and timber. If the little shit snipe at you, burn them out.
Anywhere in the annals that city fighting is mentioned, one lesson stands out. That one lesson was bitterly reinforced by my own experience in Dejigore. If you worry even a little about preserving property, the guys on the other side will eat you up. When you're in a fight, you do not worry about anything but getting your enemy before he gets you. Missiles kept coming out of the fog. They did no damage, but did advise us that the snipers had a good idea where we were. Given my encouragement, the prince's troops went off to commit wholesale arson. I chuckled.
I'm proud of me. I am, I am.
What must be done, must be done, Taide said, misunderstanding.
There was no need to tell him that I had just scuttled some plan of the Prabhrindra Dras. You'll whistle a different tune if we end up freezing our butts off because these assholes waste the whole damned city. The remains of Kialune were a rich source of firewood, not to mention stone for reinforcing earthworks. Fires began to spread. I felt giddy. Is this what power does to you? I stayed around, directing those men and other leaderless types who accumulated. The snipers were stubborn about not getting caught. Fires became more numerous. The weather turned colder as evening arrived. Rain came. It turned to sleet and freezing rain that coated everything with crystal. The fog thinned. As visibility improved, I discovered that the fires were more widespread than I had thought. Out of control and spreading, they soon yielded enough heat to turn the sleet back to rain. Smoke began to replace the fog. I told Taide, we're going to have to start hauling firewood all the way from the mountains. I sent word out not to start any more fires. It didn't do much good. The soldiers were so jumpy, they kept clinking at each other with the bamboo poles. Mogaba would get a good laugh out of this one. Full night arrived. I had been having too much fun. I did not want to be down in Kialune after nightfall. The dancing firelight only made me more nervous. What a time for the Shadow Master to loose his pets. Did you see that? I demanded.
What?
Taide sounded righteously baffled.
Can't swear to it, my eyes aren't what they used to be, but...
But I did not need to tell Taide. I thought I had seen Uncle Doge flickering through the tricky light, as though he was a shadow himself. A troll-like figure had been right behind him. Mother Gota. Interesting. Very interesting. Let's go for a walk. I headed the direction my in-laws were going. Taide followed. Of course. Taide, what do you really know about Uncle Doge? What moves him? Where's he going? Taide responded with one of his all-purpose, neutral grunts. Talk to me, damn it! I'm family!
You are black company.
Damned straight. So what? Another grunt. I admit, I ain't brown enough, short enough, skinny enough, ugly enough, or dumb enough to be a genuine swamp-loving master-raced Nguyen Bao De Duong, but I did just fine as Sari's husband. I overcame the impulse to throw him up against a handy ruin and slap the pig shit out of him till he explained what they thought they were doing, stealing my wife and pretending she was dead. In recent days, I'd found I couldn't help rubbing Taide's nose in Nguyen Bao racism.
He is a priest, Taide confessed, after considerable reflection.
Oh! You surprised me there, brother. Pretend that I'm not stupid. Not Jengao, which is a Nguyen Bao word meaning something like congenitally deformed, brain-defective foreigner.
He is a repository of old things, brother. Of old thoughts and old ways. We were a different people from a different land once upon a time. Today we live where and how we must, but among us are those who preserve ancient skills and customs and knowledge. As analyst of the Black Company, you should be able to understand that mission.
Maybe. Accumulated precipitation had filled the streets with slush. It was only inches deep, but it recalled the water-filled streets of another city in another time.
This is a nightmare, I told myself. This is a torment from Kina, maybe. The smell is here, but this is not Dejagore. Here we will not eat rats and pigeons and crows. Here, no one will indulge in dark rituals requiring human sacrifice. I studied Taide. He, too, seemed to be remembering when. I said, at least it was warmer than this.
I remember that, brother. I remember everything.
Meaning, he recalled why so many men of such a proud race had attached themselves to the Black Company in almost subservient positions.
I want you to remember those days always, Taide.
We were trapped in hell, but we survived it. I learned there.
Hell no longer has any surprises for me, nor any secrets from me.
A bit of veiled criticism, and an exposure of the bedrock philosophy that continues to get me through.
I have been to hell. I have done my time.
This dark goddess Kina could not throw anything at me worse than the things I had seen already with my own eyes.
I scurried around but never caught another glimpse of Uncle Doge, if that was him that I saw.
Taide and I stayed in the streets, spreading encouragement while trying to forget our holiday in hell. The little shit would not give up another word about Uncle Doge. Chapter 51. Croker wasn't pleased.
I don't want you pulling a stunt like that again, Mergen. There was no reason for you to put yourself at risk like that.
I found out the prince is up to something. Great big old hairy-assed deal, we knew that. Had to be.
I saw Uncle Doge sneaking around down there, too.
So, you're always worried about my in-laws.
Not as much anymore.
His tone alerted me that, once again, he knew something he wasn't going to share. Or he had an angle he meant to keep completely secret. What happened?
We reached a milestone.
And no one noticed. Which puts us at a hell of an advantage.
And you're not going to tell me?
Not a word. A little birdie might hear.
Why were you visiting the bird lady?
I made a habit of asking, like he used to ask me about Uncle Doge.
He wasn't pleased.
He offered no answer.
You have a job to do. Two jobs, in fact. Stick to those.
If I lose you, I've got nothing left but one eye.
He eyed me hard.
Wouldn't that be awful?
He caught my sarcasm.
When will Sleepy be ready?
I haven't seen him around.
Neither have I. I didn't lie, did I? I've been mapping the inside of Overlook.
Which I had, whenever there were no other demands on my time.
I hadn't put much effort into following up on the people I was supposed to watch. You know how deep into the earth its basements go?
No. And neither do the crows.
He was probably wrong about that.
Soul Catcher had been a prisoner in Overlook's deeps once upon a time.
But the point got through. Our days of paranoia were far from over.
Gotcha. Think I'll go for a walk.
I found One Eye seated across the fire from Mother Gota. They weren't talking, but them just tolerating each other was an epic amazement. Was the little wizard trying to sell her on Goblin? He did have that sneaky look, like he was up to something really villainous. I went on to One Eye's dugout. My tag-along sat down beside his mom. She dished him up some nasty imitation Yuan Bao Chao. He ate in silence. I slipped through the ragged blankets into One Eye's den. It stank in there. I don't know who he thought he was fooling. There was no mistaking the smell of the mash. The results would taste as bad as that mess smelled. He put in anything he thought would ferment. Smoke lay sprawled in a cot. One Eye had gotten Loftus and his brothers to make it. The comatose wizard had the best bed in the province. I settled into the chair beside it, wondering if it would be possible to manage without him entirely. I would experiment later, I decided. At the moment, reliability was important. I had to get him out of that hole, though, as soon as I could sneak him over to Croker's, who would shit a brick. I went after Sleepy first. I found him still waiting at Bondo Trong's city place. I followed Trong into the swamp. The old man appeared troubled. I couldn't tell why.
In present time, he was still far from the temple where Sara was getting bigger by the minute. It was scarcely a week since I'd seen her, yet she seemed to have swollen dramatically. I recalled the jokes the grown-ups had cracked about pregnant women when I was a kid. They didn't seem that funny now. I wanted to be there, even though I knew my presence would be valueless. Babies get born every day with no help from their fathers, and everywhere I've ever been, no help wanted. At birthing time, women stood united and wanted no men around. Once again, I found a time when Sara would be alone, then tried to materialize in front of her. My luck held. It was bad again. I managed only to frighten her thoroughly. "You'll know soon," I tried to say, but managed only to scare the swallows in the thatch overhead. I could be patient. This game was all in my hands now. Uncle Doge and Mother Goda didn't have a clue that I knew. I went to check up on the Radhi Shadra. At a glance, I had to say she regretted sending Cordy Mather off to check up on us bad boys. She was a cranky old witch without her play toy. People noticed, too. Not a good thing, with priests always looking for an angle. More work for me, keeping an eye on them. Have to talk it over with Croker, see if he wanted to make a project of it. I saw nothing else of interest in Taglios. The victory at Chirandaprash was general knowledge now. People of all castes and religions, rich and poor, supporters of the Black Company or its enemies, apparently took it for granted that Overlook would come next, easily. I found no fear of the Shadow Master anywhere I looked. Looked like Taglios was headed for peacetime and its good old backstabbing ways, perhaps prematurely. I moved back south, tracing Cordy Mather. Mather must have been disgruntled. He hadn't taken his assignment to heart. He and his companions had not yet reached Chirandaprash. I didn't take time to explore, but they seemed to be waiting for good weather, and nobody was any more eager than Mather to get to the fighting. They thought the war was won, too. Why go over there, where people were still killing each other? A guy could get hurt. Not to mention the cold, the primitive living conditions, the lack of entertainment and gourmet cuisine. I came back over to the cold and bloody side of the Dandaprash, zoomed around looking for signs of Mogaba, Goblin, the Forvalaka, Soulcatcher. Smoke couldn't or wouldn't find any of them, though Catcher's general location could be determined by the density of crows. She had not moved from where I had spied her meeting with the old man. Smoke would approach the Shadow Gate no more closely than ever before. Damn. Almost the entire strength of what Croker called his old division was established now in the gullies and rocky slopes of the ground between Overlook and the Shadow Gate, astride the road south to Katovar. Some of those fools, posted up close to the Shadow Gate, kept sniping at what they thought they saw on the other side. A few fireballs always drifted through the chill air. I wondered if the old man knew they were doing that. I wondered if it was a bright idea. It might take only one badly aimed fireball to cause the collapse of the gate. I went back into Overlook. It was always an adventure ambling through that fortress's dark corridors. As frightened as Longshadow was of shadows, you would think that he would keep the whole inside brightly lit. I suppose he realized that was impossible and was satisfied to live in his crystal chamber and surround himself with intense light only when he had to move around. He chose not to go out very often. The Howler, Narayan, and the Daughter of Night had free run of the place. They weren't afraid of its dark corners. They never ran into anything scary. The child had grown contemptuous of Long Shadow's fears. Neither she nor Narayan had witnessed all that could be done by the Shadow Master's pets. Neither had we, I feared. Lady had established a factory for replenishing spent bamboo poles. She'd been confident that we would need them. I was afraid she was right. Stone shudders. Eternity sneers while it devours its own tail. This cold feast is almost finished. Even death is restless. The walls are bleeding. In the darkness of the gray fortress, it is hard to distinguish but dribbles of cardinal venous blood have begun to leak from the cracks between stones. It glistens in the light rising from the abyss. Small shadows squabble around it hungrily. One crow watches. The mist from the abyss has begun to fill the fortress. Half the tilting throne is covered. The throne is tilting precariously now. It looks like the figure there would slide away into the mist if it were not pinned in place. The throne slips another millionth of an inch. A groan rises from the tortured figure. Its blind eyes flutter. One crow cackles. There is no silence. Stone is broken. Where there is even a crack, life will take root. Light will find a way in. Chapter 52. I told the old man about the troops shooting over the Shadow Gate. He scowled blackly. I don't think that's a good idea. He bellowed for a courier. He sent out a strong suggestion to our brothers with a division to the south. No crows around here, I noted. One Eye custom built me a spell I could use to make them get hungry and go away for a while, but not forever. I got the hint. I don't think we're doing enough to support ladies' men inside Overlook. Croker shrugged. I'm not concerned about Overlook anymore. Much. What? Not worried about Long Shadow? Howler? Narayan Singh and your... the Daughter of Night? Don't get me wrong, I'm not indifferent. They just don't matter as much as they did. I must have missed something. What are you saying? I'm just suggesting it, Mergen. But we could go on south now, if we wanted, if I'm right about the standard. Ah, I said, no flies on me. The standard has to be the key to the Shadow Gate. I think we could walk right through and keep on going without any danger as long as we carry the standard. Ah, I said again, but this time I had a few more thoughts. You mean we could just get everybody together, say screw you to the rest of this mob, and trot off singing merry marching songs? Exactly. Maybe. So he wasn't completely sure. Wouldn't that leave a lot unsettled? Not to mention risk opening the Shadow Gate the wrong way? Long Shadow is the master of the Shadow Gate. He can keep it sealed. What if he can't? Croker shrugged. We don't owe anybody. You just got finished telling me the Radishah is still fixing to screw us. The Prabhrindra Dra was up to something down here. Howler is no friend of ours, and Catcher has been helping me only because she thinks that'll help her get an angle on Lady. I've got a wife out there, boss, and she's got a bun in the oven. Not to mention Goblin and his crew, whom I can't find, but I'm sure they're out there somewhere on some mystery mission from you. Didn't think about that. There's no mystery. Goblin's job is to be forgotten. Then he's supposed to be in the right place if the prince runs out on us, or decides to pull some other stunt where we could use some help that comes from the blind side. I grunted. It might be true. Or it might only be what he wanted me to think. I set it aside. I could answer the question using smoke if I was determined and clever and felt any real need. I asked, what about Singh? You just going to walk away from him? I did not believe Lady would accept that. It was hard to tell what was going on inside her head, but I did think that no one and nothing would make her walk away while Narayan Singh remained in good health. I've been letting things work themselves out. I'll go on doing that for a while. But when the moment comes, I won't hesitate to take the company on down the road to Khatovar. His voice turned cold and hard and confidently formal. I was getting angry. That wasn't good. I told him, I think I'd better excuse myself now. Just in time, too. He flashed a wan smile. One of his huge crows had showed its beak into the room. If it was possible for a bird to look puzzled, this one did. It also smelled. It had lunched in the ruins. I asked One Eye, how much weight should we put on our contract with the Taglians? Ah? He gave me nothing but the puzzled grunt.
He wanted me to go away so he could play with his still. I mean, are we obligated to keep our part of the bargain until they actually try to screw us?
What's your problem? He gestured.
There were no Snoopy beaks over here. The old man's talking about walking on past Overlook. Forgetting Long Shadow and everything else. Leaving them to enjoy each other while we head on south. That idea startled the little wizard. He stopped trying to get rid of me.
He figured out how we could do that?
He thinks maybe. I don't think he knows for sure. But I do believe he's willing to test it the hard way.
That's not good. That could bring on a shitstorm the likes of which, like nothing we can imagine, probably. Like something out of the myths.
I thought so, too. He could be just shooting his mouth off, but it might be a good idea to remind him that we still haven't read those 3 missing volumes of the Annals. I've got a feeling we shouldn't overlook that. One Eye doesn't have a quarter of my faith in the Annals, nor a tenth of Croker's, but he grimaced.
A good point. I'll remind him.
Subtly, you hit him with a hammer, he tends to get stubborn.
Subtly! You know me, kid. I'm slicker than greased owl shit.
I do know you. That's what scares me.
I don't know what's gotten to your generation. You got no trust. You got no respect.
And not much patience with bullshitters either, I admitted.
I've got journals to write,
not to mention worries to worry. And food to eat. I was hungry again. Much as I ate when I was walking the ghost, I should have gotten too fat to waddle. I joined my in-laws beside their fire. Mother Gota dished me up a bowl of whatever it was she kept simmering in her pot. Nobody said anything. I had not talked to them much lately. They'd begun to suspect that I was not real social anymore. I wondered why the old woman wouldn't do her cooking inside. Tydea and I had set her up a whole private suite in our ever-expanding dugout, but she would go inside only when the weather turned foul or it was time to sleep. Tydea did most of the work on our shelter. There wasn't much else for him to do. He wasn't involved in the schemes of his mother and Uncle Doge. Thank you, I told Mother Gota as I finished. I needed that. I could not compliment her on her cooking. If ever she did screw up and make something palatable, she would not buy the real thing. She never did claim any culinary skills.
You,
she said, initiating conversation, which she did rarely.
Bone warrior, you are wary of crows. They are significant.
Her Taglian was abominable. I spoke Nguyen Bao much better, but she would not do me the courtesy. I suppose that would somehow lend legitimacy to my relationship with Sara. I stopped trying to make sense of Mother Goda's thinking years ago. I responded in Nguyen Bao.
They carry messages sometimes.
They spy. We know this. Mice and bats do the same. Those who use the animals aren't our friends. I exceeded myself telling her that much. Croker wouldn't be pleased, but I was fishing. It would be nice to find out what she knew or suspected. Sometimes she just could not help showing off.
I have seen owls in the night too, Stone Soldier. They do not behave the way owls should.
I grunted. That was news. And it told me that if owls were being used and no one else had noticed, then the old woman was a lot sharper than I'd suspected.
Last night, many crows came and went from the Shining Fortress.
I looked at her more closely. Last night, while Tydea and I were in town with the Lost Boys, while she was traipsing through the night with Uncle Doge, she'd seen something that I missed. Maybe. Crows had been scarce near Overlook lately. Long Shadow had taken a dislike to the Dark Harbingers. His crystal turrets were surrounded with nasty little spells that worked like trapdoor spiders, striking when birds came too close. That's interesting, I said. That might be something new.
There had been crows before, but never so many.
What went on in there last night that Soulcatcher found so interesting? I had seen nothing abnormal today. It might be worth checking. Maybe I was being worked. Maybe Uncle Doge and Mother Gota were bound to start checking out the oddities they'd noticed about my behavior in recent months,
Maybe they were getting ready to do whatever Croker suspected they were going to do, if he did anything more than just suspect. He suspected everybody of something.
The one who flies went out last night, soldier of darkness.
Ah, she was trying to manipulate me.
She knew I hated those enigmatic titles first employed by her father, Kidam.
The old speaker never explained them, and Mother Goda wouldn't waddle where her dad had refused to tread. That is interesting. There had been no aerial sightings of the Howler for a while. He liked to use spells of concealment when he was aloft, though. She wanted me to ask questions so she could toy with me and frustrate me. The information she had given was all I was going to get, right now. I refused to play her game. I turned to Tidae. Did I just get promoted to honorary member of the tribe? He shrugged. He seemed mildly surprised that his mother had told me anything at all. I didn't rush right over to visit Smoke. If that was what the old woman wanted, I meant to disappoint her in a big way. I tended to chores, helped Tidae work on our dugout, ate again, drank plenty, worked on the annals for a while. I could change nothing that had happened during the night. And whatever that was, it had not been so earth-shaking that it was an immediate threat. One Eye actually made it easy. Shortly after sundown, he came over with a clay pot.
"Soup's ready,"
he said. He sloshed the pot's contents. The stink of a really bad beverage quickly filled my dugout.
"All right."
I got up and followed him into the darkness. Chapter 53. "That was a stroke of luck, you showing up just then," I told One Eye. "I needed to get away." I relayed what Mother Gota had told me.
"How would she know that?"
I told him about spotting her and Uncle Doge during the night. Maybe they spotted me too.
Tidae could have told them.
"I guess.
You think it's important?"
"They make a special point of making sure I know. I'd better check it out. I didn't notice anything when I did my routine snooping." One Eye grunted. He looked thoughtful.
"Goes to show ya. No matter how well set up we are, we're gonna miss stuff because we don't know what to watch for."
Which was true. Things could be right there in the open, and even with the advantage Smoke gave me, I could miss them if I didn't know to look. There just wasn't enough time to look everywhere all the time. I suggested, "Why don't you take some of your magic potion over to my in-laws? Screw up their thinking for a while."
"Thought they didn't touch the stuff."
"They're not supposed to. But I've seen Tidae take a tummy warmer a time or three, to be sociable. And his mother would have developed a taste for it if Uncle Doge hadn't been there most of the time we were in Taglios. She'd sneak a few pints whenever he was away. She hasn't had a chance since we've been on the road."
"Very interesting."
The little black man started rustling around.
"Tell you what. I'll just go over there and keep them company while you're out. I'll tell them you're working."
He left before I finished my preparations. He lugged a slimy old wooden bucket with him. I muttered, "I gotta get him to talk to Swan." Willow Swan made bad beer too, but he did know a little about the brewer's art. Compared to One Eye's product, Willow's was ambrosia. There was very nearly a warmth to Smoke when I took hold of him, as though some part of him sensed that he was no longer alone and was pleased. I took him directly to Overlook, sliding backward in time as we went, avoiding the ruins where the fires burned so I wouldn't see myself. I had to shuffle forward and backward to find Mother Goda's crows. They were visible only briefly and were never obvious. They streaked in from the north, high above the fortress, then plummeted into Overlook like falling stones. There were no more than a dozen, so any message they carried, either direction, would be severely limited. I expected greater numbers from what my mother-in-law had said. I followed the last one down. The flock didn't go near Long Shadow's glowing tower top, where the Shadow Master labored late over some esoteric text. They plunged into the darkness of a courtyard and entered the fortress through a door standing just a crack ajar. They muttered among themselves, uncomfortable with where they were. A sharp cry, broken off, nearly spooked them. A voice whispered. I could see nothing but the vaguest shape in the darkness, but recognized the howler's aborted cry. I didn't understand a word he said. I didn't understand the crows, who took turns making noises that might have constituted a message. For me, the critical piece of information was not included in the body of the message, but in the existence of the message. Soulcatcher and Howler were communicating. I ran back in time another hour. Howler did nothing but sit there and wait. I jumped forward, planning to bracket him till I found something else interesting. I had to advance only a few minutes beyond the arrival of the crows. They stayed only briefly. Then Howler rustled back into the darkness. I drifted along behind him, tracking him by ear and by smell. Even in the ghost world, Howler had an air about him. He stayed in darkness, away from roots Long Shadow might use, till he reached a particular door. He knocked, which surprised me. Howler was the kind of guy who just invited himself in. Narayan Singh opened the door a crack. Howler fought down a shriek. He was developing a talent for silence. Singh stepped back and allowed him to enter. Howler slipped in like a diminutive deceiver on a deadly skulk.
It's time, he whispered.
Time for what? Singh knew. He went to the Daughter of Night immediately. The kid was hunched up in front of a small fire, fanatically transcribing that first book of the dead. Looked to me like she was almost done, but who knew how long a book it was. Singh seemed unsure how to approach the girl. He seemed unsure about a lot lately. He was close to superfluous and knew it. Lady always would have a use for him, though. He got the girl's attention. God, she was getting spooky. There was an aura about her, something you might call a glow of darkness. In that light, her eyes seemed to shimmer like those of a big cat stealing toward your dying campfire. You were drowsing, and she was hungry.
It's time,
Narayan told her, his whisper barely strong enough to stir the air. The child nodded curtly. She made a tiny gesture. Narayan bowed, backed away. There was no doubt who was in charge here, who ruled and who obeyed. Nor any doubt that she was herself controlled by a determined power. She extended her riding hand to Narayan for help rising. It was a claw she could not relax. Her legs were too stiff to unfold on their own. For a moment, I pitied her, forgetting she was no true child. Howler returned to the corridor. He drifted along ahead of Singh and the girl, scouting. Those two insisted on a lamp, which troubled Howler deeply. He muttered and fussed the whole time they were doing their sneak. By a tortuous route that avoided Long Shadow, the garrison and the enclave still held by lady soldiers, Howler led them to an unguarded piece of wall overlooking Kialune. Fires were burning down there. I was down there with Taide, cold and disappointed with myself for having been dumb enough to insist on the eyewitness view. I didn't tag along in real time. I skipped forward, compressing events. Howler's destination was a small carpet concealed atop a domeless tower, otherwise not in use. It was a new carpet, smaller than those we'd seen before, black as the night around.